Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the Sports Report Podcast with Brad and Clay. Clay, how are we doing today, buddy?
I can't complain.
You know, it's basically been four different chapters in the finals so far. And then in game four, this was a really interesting game to take place because of what happened previously in these three games. So we go to game four. It doesn't feel like the Warriors have this series in hand right now. It feels like the Cavaliers are almost even with the Warriors just because of how dominant that last game was. And we still haven't seen a breakout game by Steph Curry or Klay Thompson. And you got to think, if the Cavaliers fans and the players were that hyped for game three, they would come out even more hyped for game four, knowing how big of an impact the result would be. And it just didn't feel the same.
It really didn't. Maybe at the beginning of the game, but as the game wore on, I think Cleveland was just so used to losing. Just the city, just the team, so used to losing in the finals that, you know, once things started kind of going downhill, it just expected it to happen, I guess. You know what I mean?
We're all begging for a tight and close game in this one because we've had so many blowouts this postseason, including two here in the first three games of the finals. And we got what we wanted. It was a tough, competitive game the entire way, basically. And the Warriors pulled out 108-97 in the end. The Splash Brothers got their rhythm back a little bit with Klay Thompson and Stephen Curry combining for 63 points. Steph Curry ends up with 38 points and hits 7 3-pointers. Klay shot just as well as Steph Curry, shooting 4 out of 9 with 25 points.
Right.
And we saw them get back to their normal selves. On the other end, for the Cavaliers, LeBron James didn't have a terrible game, but he ends up with 25 points, but basically with 19 points, as 6 of that is layups coming in garbage time to keep the game within 5 to 6 points there. Wasn't really a great game by LeBron James. Ends up being another loss for Cleveland in the finals. A big one because now they're down 3-1 in these series, and no team in NBA history has come back down 3-1 in NBA finals to win the championship. So it puts a lot of pressure on Cleveland. Puts even more pressure on LeBron James to come out and be fired up for game five when they head back to Oakland and heading back to Oracle, which, you know, their fans are going to be crazy in that game just because of the Warriors able to steal one in Cleveland and come back home to possibly wrap it up for back-to-back championships.
Yeah, it's going to be a loud, crazy environment. My first thought is that it may not be much of a game, but who knows? Cleveland may come out with their backs against the wall and nothing to lose and play like they did in game three, but I don't know. After losing a game at home that you couldn't lose and down 3-1, I don't know. That's tough.
And this is something that the Cavaliers haven't had to face in the postseason this year, is losing a game at home and then coming back off that loss to try to steal one on the road like that. They've won games on the road and swept teams, of course, in the postseason, but they haven't had to come off a home loss to do it and to stay in the series, because let's face it, if they lose this game, it really is over this year, and the Warriors could possibly end up with another championship.
It will be interesting to see how they do. I don't know if history tells you anything. I don't know. Usually when these Cleveland teams get down like that after a deflating loss, I don't know. I think it may be over in five.
You know, the story of the game to me watching it all take place was we saw how focused and how much effort that the Cavaliers put into game three, because they knew they had to get start playing in this series a little bit. So they do that. They come out on fire in game three. The crowd's into it. All the players are super hyped for the game. Kyrie comes out on fire. LeBron's doing his thing. And game four, you thought they would kind of duplicate that a little bit as much as they can because it worked so well in the last game. And I believe they tried really hard to do that in the beginning. In the first quarter, it was a really tight, contested game. It was a one-point game at the end of it. 29-28, Warriors were leading. And then from there on out, the focus and the discipline on the defensive end, you know, doing so much of a good job guarding Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and switching on screens and everyone breaking down on-ball defense, that really deteriorated as the game went on. J.R. Smith made mental mistakes and left Klay Thompson wide open. Yeah. And on the other side, there was a few times where they would do, every time Steph Curry would get the ball on a screen, basically, two Cavs would come and trap him. And then after the trap, but of course, one guy would try to get back, but they end up both not knowing which ones to go back and get the other guy. They end up leaving Steph Curry wide open, which you can't do. So So much about this game was about the Splash Brothers getting back to their normal selves and getting back into their rhythm, but that was facilitated a little bit more because the Cavaliers gave them so many open shots to make from downtown.
Yeah, it was a, probably the worst defensive effort of the series for Cleveland, which is really surprising. At the same time, though, you had to know that the Splash Brothers would eventually get hot. Still a little disappointing by me, by the defense, the rotation was kind of slow, and just the effort at times defensively for Cleveland was a little underwhelming. Especially in crunch, it was still, what, a 7-8-point game with 5 minutes to go? I mean, it wasn't just a complete blowout, and it just seemed like Cleveland's defensive effort, you'd have thought they were down 30. Couldn't get a defensive rebound at the end of the game to save their life, it seemed like. I'm probably exaggerating, but, it's just how, I guess in that moment, that's just how it felt, when you got four guys at the basket and one warrior at the basket and you let the one guy get the rebound, it's just very disappointing.
You're right. And I think it has to do a lot to the credit of the Golden State Warriors. With any time they're ahead of a team, it feels like they're up by 40. No matter who the opponent is or what the situation is, anytime they're up by at least 5 or 6, it just feels like they're up by a lot more than that. One good thing to point out here about Steph Curry is he, in the last couple of games in this series, it looked kind of like he was frazzled a little bit. He was getting beat up, going in between screens and all that, and he was not getting any kind of breathing room by any Cavs player. And I thought that he did a really good job at the end of the first quarter and the beginning of the second quarter of finally beating some people off on-ball defense, getting past him a little bit and penetrating and setting guys up for open shots. He did that a couple times. He had 3 really quick assists and 1 hockey assist, if you can count that as well, coming off a fast break that set up an open shot. So he did a good job of getting guys open looks to get himself going a little bit, because then you have to respect his passing ability, which means you can't leave that guy either. So you have to decide which one would you rather leave open. And sometimes they left Steph Curry open, and that was the wrong choice to make.
Yeah, you can't leave either one of them open, for sure. And it just seemed like the rotation was just a little bit slower than in the past 4 games.
So the Cavaliers start this game, and Kevin Love has been cleared to play. He's listed as active and full contact. He's going to be ready to go. He's going to play at some point. Now Tyronn Lue decided not to start him. Richard Jefferson gets a start, which I think was the right choice, but basing everything off what we saw in Game 3. I don't think you don't want to mess with what happened to what led you to success in just the last game. So Kevin Love coming off the bench, he checks in with 5.5 minutes left to go in the first quarter, and the crowd goes crazy to give him a huge applause. I didn't really expect that because of what we heard, rumors and fans and all this stuff. I feel like with Cleveland, with any other team, the fans choose player sides more than anybody else. I can just see that if they had to, they basically decide whose side do you want, LeBron's or Kevin Love's or Kyrie's or LeBron's. They feel like they just choose sides instead of saying it's a team thing. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
So I didn't really expect a huge applause for Kevin Love. I'm glad he got one. I actually like the guy a lot. And coming off the bench, there's a little bit of news circling around before the game that possibly coming off the bench would open things up for Cleveland, for both the team as a whole and for Kevin Love, because you can find a way to stagger LeBron and Kevin's minutes, kind of like what Billy Donovan did with the Thunder, with Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook, where sometimes they're on the floor together, but if you stagger them where they're not, you always have that one guy who can run the offense through. You just couldn't play Kyrie and Kevin Love together for that long of a period without LeBron because of the lack of effort they give you on the defensive end, really.
Good point.
So Kevin Love checks in. He immediately dives on the floor for a loose ball. He gets it. Cavaliers get it. And he makes his first bucket in the paint. And he gets going a little bit. Finds a way to get some open shots. Ends up with 11 points, 5 rebounds, and about 25 minutes of play. Had a pretty solid game. What Tyronn Lue does from here, it's going to be even more difficult decision. Right now, it's pretty much a toss-up, because if you were to go on and win last night's game, then you could say, well, we're going to roll with RJ and keep Kevin Love coming off the bench. But now that Kevin Love's going to be, really fully 100% back, I don't see how you keep him on the bench in the next game when it's a do-or-die game and he's one of your best players on your roster.
Well, I think it'll just be more minutes, but I don't know. The way Jefferson plays defense and does the dirty things, can really benefit a team, but also Kevin Love, can obviously score 20 a night, maybe get them both on the floor at the same time and go really small, but then Tristan Thompson was about the only good rebounder on the team except for LeBron. So if Golden State goes small, you know, I'd like to see Love at the five, LeBron at the four, Jefferson at the three, you know, JR at the two, and obviously Irving at the one. I think that would be the bit small enough to kind of match Golden State's small lineup.
That'd be a great offensive lineup. The only thing you're worried about there is Kevin Love. And, you know, you have to find a way to hide Kevin and Kyrie on the defensive end, because the Warriors have so many guys who can beat you off the dribble and shooting outside the arc.
Let's see, when the Warriors go small, what Green is the five, I guess. And
basically, Steph, Clay, Iguodala, Harrison Barnes, and Draymond Green. So Iguodala is basically your four.
Yeah, I could see Iguodala. You know, Iguodala matched up on LeBron. That would be a good matchup. And Kevin Love and Draymond are kind of similar. I guess Draymond's more of a banger, but as far as height and size goes, you know. Harrison Barnes, Richard Jefferson McGovern could handle Harrison Barnes. So, yeah, I think that would be a pretty good lineup to try and counter that. But really the biggest thing I'd worry about would be Irving on Steph Curry, as you mentioned, because as you mentioned, Kyrie's defense, you know, kind of makes you shake your head at times.
And to his credit, he's had more of an effort in the last two games compared to the first two games of the series. Last night had a couple mental breakdowns that we're accustomed to seeing from Kyrie. But you're right. I mean, you can't expect Kyrie to fully guard Steph Curry like that. You know, for 40. You know, for any time that he's not switched off of him, and any time Kyrie's not completely focused, 100% disciplined, then it's going to come out and bite him in the end. We talked about how close the first quarter was, and a lot of that is really the detriment of Tristan Thompson, who had a fantastic first quarter, grabbing five offensive rebounds. Two or three of these being put back for and ones, and that really kept them, you know, even with the Warriors in the first quarter. Because I think if you don't have that, then you may be, you know, looking at a 6-7 point deficit going into the second quarter. And from then on out, who knows how the game would have shaken out. But Thompson has been the one guy on the boards for, it feels like no other player on the Cavaliers team has had a rebound this series besides Tristan Thompson. Just the effort that he puts into it. And the way he just goes, there'll be four guys in the paint. He'll jump up and grab it and then find a way and get. And when he does come back down, it's almost like every other Warriors player jumps up, you know, like goes for his pump fake, and he leads him with a wide open dunk or layup. And they foul him every time, too. I don't get it. So Thompson had a tremendous game in the first quarter. He doesn't really carry over to the majority of the game. He ends up with 10 points, 7 rebounds total after 5 offensive rebounds in the first quarter.
And he kind of did the same thing. Happened in game three. And they had a big first half, I guess. Had like 10 rebounds in the first half. Or was in the first quarter. And he had like 5 or 6 rebounds in the first quarter.
Yeah, it's basically the same show for Tristan Thompson. Yeah.
And the rest of the game, he only had a few rebounds. And then last night, it was even worse. I think he only had, 2 rebounds the rest of the game.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know if he's just – I mean, getting rebounds, you can't say, well, Cleveland didn't – try to get him involved, because getting rebounds, you're basically getting yourself involved.
And if you're Tristan Thompson in this series, that's the only way you're going to get into the game, because they're not going to throw you the ball in the paint and let you ISO and back somebody down unless you get a crazy mismatch like a Steph Curry on you or something like that. So that's the only way you feel like you're into this game is if you're aggressive on the defensive end, pulling down rebounds, and on the offensive end, pulling down rebounds. But you're right, in the second half, it's like a total different script for the Cavaliers, because not only was Tristan Thompson not as great as he was in the first quarter, but the whole Cavaliers team, they were not focused. They were not putting as much effort on the defensive end. They had a few mental breakdowns, and that led to a lot of open shots, not only from the outside for Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, but also in the paint for guys cutting and slashing like Andre Iguodala, Draymond Green, Harrison Barnes had another great game. So a lot of this was not just getting lucky and having them hit their open shots on the outside, but also leaving them open spots in the paint. Right before halftime, the Cavaliers were up by 5, and Andre Iguodala pulls down a rebound. There's a few seconds left on the clock. He goes up to shoot it at halftime at the buzzer, and he gets fouled by J.R. Smith. He really does. There's no call. Steve Kerr goes crazy, but more importantly, Luke Walton goes crazy on the bench, which I've seen him more emotional the last couple of games than I have all season long. But he gets really emotional. He gets a technical foul, and coming out of halftime, the Cavaliers were to make that technical free throw and got an easy bucket by LeBron after that, and they're up by 8 within like the first 20 seconds of the third quarter.
That was interesting, though. There wasn't a little scuffle on that foul at halftime?
No. No, it's just Andre.
That's when Luke Walton got the,
Right. But I've seen this a couple of times. Iguodala had made about three of these three-pointers, and every time he did, I couldn't tell if he was taunting the Cavaliers fans because he was holding his hands out, or if he was complaining to the referee saying, "I got fouled." Either way, he was like, every time he was shooting, you know how Ricky Bobby looked in Talladega Nights where he didn't know what to do with his hands? That's what Iguodala looked like every time he made a three.
Probably complaining to the refs, but yeah.
He would shoot the three, and you can always tell when his three is going in. For some reason, the camera changes the angle for some reason anytime that he shoots a three, and you can tell when it's going in. And then you watch him run back on the other end, and he's holding his hands out, looking at him like, what do I do with these now?
I guess he's just saying that his hands, he's on fire, I guess.
But from there on out, it was all Golden State and didn't get much better in the fourth quarter. And the Cavaliers were on a dry spell, not hitting a field goal in 6 minutes, and only having 7 points into the fourth quarter with 5.5 minutes left to go in the game. That's something you can't do if you're in the NBA Finals. And you're into this game, you're only down by 6 or 7, you can't go on long stretches without getting a bucket.
No, absolutely not. Maybe that's why they just felt like they're out of the game.
I will say that in this time, whenever they were not making any of their shots, and not all of these were great shots either. Kyrie was throwing up junk and all this stuff late in the game. But on the other end, like there for a minute, you thought you were watching the Warriors playing at home because the way they were moving the ball, they were getting out on fast breaks, and they're hitting open threes on fast breaks too. So you really felt like the Warriors were back at home for a second there, and that's something you can't have in a crunch time moment in the game with the last 8 minutes in the game. You can't have that where you don't score for 6 minutes and the other team is basically dominating, getting back to the way they normally play. And one of the biggest things to take away from this game, Clay, is Steve Kerr referred to game three for the Warriors as soft. They played soft. They didn't have as much effort or aggressiveness to them in game three. So he pretty much challenged his team the way that Greg Popovich would challenge his team. In game four, they had that challenge to go out there, to not be soft, to go out and play hard and aggressive. And you didn't have a choice in this game as the referees were basically not calling any fouls whatsoever. There were so many missed calls that could have been called as fouls or double fouls or even maybe flagrant fouls that never got called. So I don't know, now in the era that we watch basketball now, you expect to have so many calls made. Just basically from watching every game, you can kind of get a sense of what's a foul and what's not a foul. But if you were to go back 20 years, obviously the game has changed, and some players are thinking, if you're a player sitting at home right now, like if you're Magic Johnson watching a game last night, you're thinking, oh man, this ain't a foul. That's hard-nosed basketball right there. But if you're anybody who's watched the game and played in the game, in the last 5 years, you couldn't believe how many missed calls were made and how much of a dogfight last night really was.
Yeah, a lot of people, and myself included, I think they're a little quick with the whistle. So, it's good to see him kind of let them play a little bit. Yeah, I agree with you. Last night there was a few calls that should have been made. But, hey, that's just part of the game. At least they were consistent with it, I thought.
Yeah, it was crazy to think because we've seen a few missed calls in every game. Of course, that's going to happen. But last night's game was one exception because basically in the second half, in the fourth quarter especially, it felt like a dogfight. There were almost zero fouls called. You had people diving on the floor. I've seen elbows. There was a scuffle between LeBron and Draymond. They ended up getting a double foul there only because they wouldn't have called anything while the game was going on. Draymond and LeBron James just stood there and we're talking to each other, so they wouldn't have called anything unless that was happening.
They
let it go for like another 3 or 4 seconds until they're basically shoving each other at the 3-point line. And what happened was Draymond and LeBron were fighting back and forth, pushing back and forth. Draymond falls to the floor, and for a second there, you could almost see him raise his leg up to go and trip LeBron. And it's almost like he had a mental thing where he said, "You know what? I can't do that today because if I do, I could get suspended for the next game." So he pulled his leg down real quick, and LeBron basically did an Allen Iverson over Tyronn Lue and stepped over him. But it was while Draymond was getting up, so he kind of hit him a little bit getting up, and Draymond shoved LeBron, didn't really appreciate that disrespect he showed him. And then Draymond had said something, never said what Draymond said to LeBron, but he did not like it at all. This is exactly what he wants to do, is get into people's heads, and he did just that to LeBron last night.
He did, and I saw LeBron and Curry have a few words back and forth, but I don't think it was too much of a big deal. Was that the same time, or was that later in the game?
That actually was like maybe 30 seconds or a minute from what had transpired between him and Draymond. So yeah, it was right around that same time. You know, we talk about the lack of fouls called. You have that plus trying to keep up and keep that same effort and focus that you had in game three and following all these guys around and really trying hard. And we mentioned how the lack of a bench the Cavaliers have had this postseason, especially in these finals. So the starters are dog tired from playing so many minutes in these games. So you have that. Then you have the fact that you've tried your best on defensive end and you have to go out and make plays on the offensive end, because if you're stagnant on offense, Kyrie will dribble and throw up a crazy shot at the buzzer for the shot clock. So when you're trying to be as focused and show as much effort on the defensive end and keep up with your natural flow of your offense, and you're not getting any foul call made by the referees, and you're having to just basically fight and scratch for any kind of loose balls or for rebounds, then that really, really makes you fatigued for the rest of the game. And we saw that really wear down the Cavaliers, and the Warriors were able to capitalize on that and pull away just a little bit there at the end of the game.
Yeah, you could tell they were a little wore out. I didn't think about it like that, but yeah, that's how it seemed.
Yeah, I mean, all in this time span here, the Warriors go on a 12-1 run. The Cavaliers don't have a bucket in 6 minutes. And then the emotions get up, and it gets heated in the last 3-4 minutes, all these fouls not being called and double foul called on, which could be, you know, double technicals, but to Draymond Green's credit, it wasn't, because if he does get one more, then he's out for the next game. So it wasn't in the hands for the Cavaliers to win last night's game. They put a great effort. We finally got what we all wanted, which was a tough, competitive game for 48 minutes, and the Warriors found a way to pull it out, and now we're up 3-1 heading back to Oakland.
Heading back, and I think Game 5 will probably do it.
There were a lot of things that played into the favor of the Warriors, but two really important stats here is only 9 turnovers for the Golden State Warriors in this game. That's matching the number that they had in the first game, in which they went on to win that game as well. So taking care of the ball, and then when you go out and set a new NBA Finals record hitting 17 three-pointers, you know, having those two stats in your favor, obviously you like your chances finishing out and winning the game. Now another note here is the Cavaliers lost by 11. They also missed 11 free throws. Some of those were LeBron. Some of those were Tristan Thompson. If you're the Cavaliers, you have to clean up a little bit. You have to stay focused on the defensive end next game. You can't get fatigued like they were in this one. And you have to make the most of your chances, especially at the free throw line.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, those foul shots, they add up.
So, Clay, we have Game 5 in Oakland on Monday night. What are we going to see?
I think we're going to see the series come to an end. You know, I don't think it'll be a great game. I'm not saying that it's an absolute blowout. I wouldn't be surprised if the Cavs kind of came out, you know, playing well early and playing with a lot of intensity early. But I think Steph and Klay Thompson, I think it'll be similar to Game 4, I really do. I think Steph and Thompson will start hitting some shots. Iguodala off the bench will give Golden State a spark like he has so many times in the past. And I think Cleveland will see the writing on the wall about midway through the fourth quarter, and Golden State will pull away and win 107 to.
You know, in the words of LeBron, this is a win or die game in Game 5, except for real, because if you lose this when the season's over, I'm like you. I think the Warriors close out here in 5. They're going back home. Oracle's going to be nuts.
You know, look at Oklahoma City in the series of, you know, in the Western Conference Finals when they were up 3-1, couldn't finish, and it just snowballed, and now they're at home. You know, Golden State needs to – if I'm Steve Kerr, I'm driving that home all weekend. You know, we were down 3-1. Look what we did.
I'm really glad you brought that up, because, you know, just going back from last series, people were burying the Warriors, saying their season's over and Steph Curry shouldn't have been the MVP and all this other stuff. They come out and they somehow win the series. They went they went into Oklahoma City and beat them in Game 6 to take it back home. And win Game 5 at home, win Game 7 at home to advance to the finals. So they know if they don't come out fired up and ready to go, that the Cavaliers could capitalize on that, because they know how important this game is, because if they lose, they're going home. So they're going to come out hot and really aggressive like they have in the last couple of games. But at the same time, down the stretch, how fatigued are the Cavaliers going to be? We're trying to keep up with Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. The crowd's going to be crazy. You know, it's just going to be the most important part is, of course, how you start. But we both predict that the Cavaliers and the Warriors will start out basically the same and be a tough game in the first half. But in the second half, it could be a 50-50 toss-up because the Cavaliers could come out just as aggressive or they could come out fatigued and that their effort deteriorate as the game goes on and the Warriors ride off into the sunset for back-to-back championships and putting the cap, arguably the best NBA season in the history of the league.
Yeah. That's best record in the league, for that matter.
Yeah, they do. They passed the Bulls last night with their 88th win for the most wins in a single season. So if they go on to, of course, win one more game like we think they will, 89 wins. That's a crazy stat to think about, how this team has won 89 games this year.
If you include exhibition, it might be 100.
Includes training camp, it could be over 120. Who knows? I think you're right, though. I think the Warriors close it out in 5, and we're celebrating the end of the NBA season. We've talked about the Warriors winning this championship for 4 months now. Okay, we've already pretty much booked it, pretty much already gave them the trophy. So I'm just ready to go ahead and say they won the championship for sure. That's the only thing. I'm ready.
Go ahead and make it official.
Right, exactly.
Just go ahead and make it official Monday night.
There you go. Just win in game 5, win back-to-back championships. You have back-to-back MVPs, and we can move on to the offseason. A lot of stuff's going to happen July 1st. And then next season, I really can't see the Warriors winning 3 championships in a row. So next season is going to be a really interesting year for a lot of teams. Well, Clay, thanks so much for coming on board and doing another Sports Report podcast with me, a Saturday edition. I hope you have fun at your birthday party. I don't know if you're going to eat cake or not after you had that milkshake last night. Who knows?
Ooh, I don't know, man.
That's a lot of dessert.
Insulin's going to be working overtime this week.
You're going to have to go on another hike.
I'm telling you.
But yeah, man, we'll see you probably next week for a Game 5 recap of the NBA Finals.
Sounds good to me.
Remember, you can check out replays of new and archive episodes on iTunes. And check us out on Facebook and Twitter @The Sports Report. We'll see you next week for a brand new podcast.